The second Sunday in the Easter season, we are in an Easter season, right? Last week was the first of many Easter Sundays. The second Sunday in the Easter season is all about doubting new life is possible. Doubting Thomas, the story we read every year on this Sunday, reveals the way that we still struggle to follow the gospel's good news. The Gospels are filled with story after story of the disciples not understanding the call to discipleship, right? Jesus reveals to them time and time again before his death, here is the risk. This is the risk of the gospel, death on a cross, execution by the state, persecution by the authorities. This is the risk of the gospel. And he reveals to them time and time again, and here is the vision. That all people will be fed, right? The feeding of the 5,000. Here is the vision that those suffering will be healed. The leper, the hemorrhaging woman, and all the blind folks. Here is the vision that those shut out economically, the fishermen, that those shut out because of their social standing or the condition of their body, because they are women or disabled or foreigner, the vision is they will all be included and affirmed and beloved. The risk and the vision, this is the work of ministry. This is the call of the gospel. And time and again, they struggle to understand. And even in death and new life, Thomas lives there, in that cloudy place, struggling to understand. When we read about the doubt of Thomas, we often get stuck theologizing about it, right? Like, what specifically was it that Thomas doubted? Did he doubt whether Jesus actually had a body again, right? Was he really alive? Was he ghost-like? What happened in the metaphysical realm, in the physical realm? There's countless theologies about this, right? What is the resurrection anyway? Thomas's questions are ours, and there is a lesson there for us that regardless of your answers to the existential or theological questions about resurrection, the lesson is Thomas doubted new life to be possible. However you explain it, Thomas doubted new life to be possible. Heavy with grief and hopelessness, feeling defeated by the powers of the state, feeling the weightiness of that risk, right? Feeling and experiencing and witnessing the violence and the domination of those in power. Thomas doubted that new life was possible. So rather than asking you to explain what resurrection means to you, or to define it, or to explain it and have a theory about it, I want to know what new life feels impossible to you. What is the transformed life that you doubt can be experienced, that you doubt is accessible? In this Lenten and Easter season, I pray that you've wrestled on both sides of the cross. That you have asked, what systems of harm has the violence of the cross revealed to you this year? What death-dealing cultures and structures, what imperial powers have taken life from us in the name of protecting power and so-called stability? What attempts at liberation and healing have been squashed, who have engaged the risk of the cross, right? What attempts at liberation and healing have been squashed to maintain the status quo? And how is resurrection, in spite of that violence, in defiance and resistance to that violence, how is resurrection reorganizing your understanding about what is possible, about what is emerging from that dark place? And Thomas, my friend, what doubt is getting in the way of our ability to embrace a transformed life, to imagine resurrection? At the beginning of the pandemic, a friend of mine put out a call on Facebook looking for people interested in starting a local mutual aid network. Now, I had participated in a smaller mutual aid effort before, and so I raised my hand, but really I just wanted to connect to some community, right, in this place of separation and isolation. I was new to this place. And I've spoken about mutual aid here before. It is simply neighbors helping neighbors. This can take many forms, but in general, some kind of organizational team or a coordination effort will come together to ensure that those who are able to offer some support can find those who need some support, right? That the neighbor can find the neighbor as easily as possible. But really, the structure that exists is only for that purpose. The point is to bring neighbors together in relationship, to offer care and support to each other. In this group, we affirm that everyone has something to give and everyone has something they need, so that you are not always the one giving, nor are you the one always receiving. That brings us into right relationship, and it affirms dignity of all those engaged along the way. We affirm that when we come into that kind of relationship with our neighbors to give and receive support, we build a stronger community. Sometimes the structures of our programs or our nonprofits that we trust to help us care for each other get in the way of actually recognizing each other's needs, of affirming each other's dignity along the way, of creating that two-way relationship, right? Instead of that charitable one-way relationship. And allowing each other's stories to influence each other's lives. It's easier to maintain our excess and the status quo when we give to a third-party charity than it is when we come into relationship with a neighbor who needs support to buy food for their children. It's easier to maintain our excess. Mutual aid invites us into the work of caring for one another in relationship and not just offering that support, but it also invites us into the work of organizing ourselves, neighbor to neighbor, to fight to change the conditions that are causing the suffering. In this kind of relational network, we get to tend to each other's grief and hunger and joy, and we get to be transformed and find life anew in that. Life is slower, less extractive, more connectional, and more tender. Mutual aid is an act of imagination, of trying on trust. What would it feel like to actually just look our neighbor in the eye and ask for what we need? What would it feel like to look our neighbor in the eye and to offer them the thing that we have to offer out of love and trust without hesitation about why it may be needed? I used to think the reason we couldn't live into this way of being as a community or a society was a failure of imagination, that we couldn't get to the place where we could imagine that there was no one hungry or unhoused, that we lived by that excuse that is propped up by the misunderstood Bible verse, that we would always have the poor with us. I used to think that we needed to get people to dream bigger and dream better. It was a failure of our imagination. And then you encounter a verse like this in Acts. These four short sentences that simply say, and then they did it. They did it. They did it. The solutions aren't really that complicated. In fact, more and more studies are showing one of the most simple answers to global poverty is, wait for it, give people cash. How do you solve an imbalance of money? You give people money. You pay them directly. This short passage in Acts shows the disciples did it. It wasn't that hard to imagine. They were of one heart and soul. No one claimed private ownership of any property, but they held all in common, and there was not a needy person among them. And how did they do that? Those who owned lands or houses sold them, and what was needed was given. And Acts says it was this was the great testimony to the resurrection. This was the dream of the kingdom of God that Jesus had been preaching about. With great power, they gave testimony, it says, not only through preaching and baptism and direct action, but through building the community they dreamt of. They did it. By these acts, right? The book is called Acts, the Acts of the Apostles. By these acts, they gave testimony. Through these signs and wonders, they began to build the very world they had been teaching and dreaming and struggling for alongside Jesus. They fed people, and those who had land sold it and gave it to the community. They did not set up a scholarship fund. They did not set up a grant opportunity. They did not give handouts or free meals, only when people were desperate. There were no vouchers or programs or lines, or most importantly, there were no qualifications. You didn't have to be sober or of the right family or clean. They shared ownership with one another, and all were fed. Doubt and fear get in the way of our courage. It's like that church refrain, you know, the favorite hymn, you know the one. We've never done it that way before. Yeah? Resurrection is embracing a life we have never yet lived before. Resurrection is life anew. It is the life we have struggled to imagine and have definitely not yet felt. We have to try a thing we've never done. And doubt and fear get in the way of our imagination. We worry that if we give up our land, we won't have a place to live. If we give up our spot, we won't have the privacy we need. If we empty our bank account, who's going to be left to take care of us? If we give up our possessions, our resources, our land, that someone more greedy will take it. This is the death-dealing myth of empire, that the control or the benevolent ruler or the benevolent system or the body of elders or the board of directors will take care of the people. Jesus showed us the people take care of the people. And then in his absence, the disciples did it. Risks abound. The risk of the cross looms in the distance, still present as a tool to intimidate and eradicate our attempts to live as the beloved community, to live anew. And in the face of that risk, let us practice resurrection. Let us take up the cross and imagine, what if we lived in a world where everyone did have a place to stay and no one had to worry about how to pay for it? Imagine that. What would change in our world if that were true? Just that one thing. What if healthcare was actually available to everyone who needed it? To everyone in need of healing and support, healthcare was accessible, especially in a pandemic. What would that have changed about the last year? Can you imagine? Can you imagine? What if those workers who helped bring packages to our doorstep had enough time to use the restroom at work? To eat lunch and take a personal phone call from their child's school while at work? What if they were treated with dignity? What if they were trusted at their workplace? If you have not yet read about the struggle of Amazon workers attempting to defend themselves recently, I encourage you to find their stories. What if we lived in a world when you needed some space? I need a lot of this kind of space. By the shoreline, or in the silence of the trees? What if you lived in a world where when you needed that space and that solitude, that just carving out that space for a little bit of alone time to revel in the beauty of creation and be healed by the presence of God in that place. What if you could go to that place and those around you would consent to your privacy and give you that space? That space is inaccessible to a lot of people. There would be no need to protect a parcel for yourself if we lived in a world where we respected each other's needs for that solitude and consented to grant it. There would be no ownership of that space. We are coming out of a pandemic, sort of, little by little, in fits and starts, like resurrection. People are being vaccinated, and the spring is here, and we can be outside more. And Easter, of course, reminds us that there is life beyond all the death and the loss of this last year plus. And in reflecting on that, my friend and my comrade on the mutual aid team, Mae Beal, said to me, did you know that the Roaring Twenties happened right after the flu pandemic of 1918? At first, I had this taste of excitement, like, what kind of exuberant freedom and fun is ahead? Yeah? Like, who wants to party like the Great Gatsby? Come on. Are you ready? I'm kind of ready for that. Yeah? And then the dread set in. In the economic boom of the 20s, there were millions left behind. And economic inequity grew immensely in that time, as the rich got richer and the poor started their depression a decade earlier than we mark it in the history books. Dread set in because I feared that perhaps we will have learned nothing, that out of the refuge of our solitude and the prison of pandemic, we will emerge with such hunger that we will consume and destroy more than ever. We will be frenzied in that consumption because of the real and necessary and human desire that we have for feeling connected and feeling alive again. That desire is not bad. As we emerge from the tomb and into the light, what grief are we still holding like Thomas? Much has been lost this year. And what doubt remains in our heart? The empty tomb is not a return to life as usual. We've heard that a lot, right? I just can't wait to get back to normal, right? Life as normal. Emerging from the tomb is not returning to life as normal. It is a transformed life. It is a resurrected life, a life anew. And Thomas doubts that is possible. And when I am feeling hopeless, so do I. My imagination allows me to hope that as we come out of this pandemic, we will carry forward the lessons that we have learned. The pandemic has taught me that we are more connected than alone. We are more dependent upon one another than self-sufficient. Your health is my health, and that is beautiful. May we not forget that. The pandemic has taught me that the pace of life at which we have been living is utterly unsustainable. Utterly unsustainable. And in fact, more joy, more healing, more rest, more feeling, more creativity is possible when we slow down. May we not forget that. My doubt keeps me grounded about what other outcomes are possible. The risk looms, right? Can I live holding both? Can my imagination help bring forth our collective liberation? And can my doubt help me ground deeper into my values, recognizing another more destructive way is yet possible? What transformed life is possible? What doubt is getting in the way of that imagination? And what grief have we not yet processed? When Jesus blesses those who believe without seeing, he affirms our capacity for imagination, for leaning into our longing and trusting our vision. Even when we have not yet felt our dream alive in our bones, he says, reach for that. Reach for the world of your dreams, even though it has not yet come into being. He blesses those who believe that without seeing. And for those who doubt, hope is not lost. Jesus returns to find Thomas, right? He came to the disciples first, and then he came back to find Thomas. He comes to him, he comes back for him, behind closed doors and in pursuit of the one that he knows longs to believe a transformed life is possible, but has not yet mustered the courage to lean in. Thanks be to God that there is room for all of us to be gathered in, to be entrusted with the sacred work of kingdom building. And may our imagination and our doubt always bring us closer to new life. Amen.